Have you heard that health authorities in New York City have recently banned supersize servings of soft drinks in shops and outlets in an effort to curb the city's obesity epidemic? It's an interesting strategy, isn't it? New data just released in Australia about our own consumption suggests that we consume 100 litres of the sweet fizzy stuff per person per year. But here's the key, we're doing it at home. So I wonder if strategies like the New York City example will help in a place like Australia. Health professionals are flying the red flag over all this liquid sugar we're gulping, and then there are all those energy drinks packed full of caffeine, but that's another story. I'm joined this morning by Associate Professor John Fitzgerald. He's a health policy analyst in the School of Social and Political Science at the University of Melbourne. He's also recently headed up a major health promotion agency in Victoria. Welcome to the show, John.
Good morning.
You know, these drinks have been around for eons. Why is this such a major concern right now for us?
Yeah, it's a concern now because there's very, very strong evidence that consumption of soft drinks predicts obesity. And importantly, it predicts obesity in young kids. And we know that the patterns for consumption are set pretty early. And there's more detailed data that's coming out now about what it is that actually facilitates young people to drink soft drinks at very, very high levels.
What's the data telling us about that?
Well, what we can see is that we used to focus primarily on getting kids to reduce their consumption of junk food, and we used to target it at the junk food sellers, you know, the retail environment.
Or the school canteen.
Yeah, that's right. And look, in 2007 in New South Wales, they introduced restrictions on access to soft drinks in school canteens, and that's good. It's been a little bit patchy. Not all places actually do well in this regard. Vending machines tend to have a bit of a role to play. However, overall, we know that actually if we reduce access to these things for school kids, actually you can see some good results. What's coming out, however, is a little bit more complicated picture, and it's not just in Australia, but it's internationally as well, that we need to keep a focus on the retail outlets, that's for sure, but it's actually the home which is coming out as a real place where we need to focus our energy.
How so? What does the data suggest about how much soft drink kids, families are drinking at home? And it's not, this isn't the stuff of special occasions anymore, is it? This is a drink with the daily meals.
Yeah, this is the most fascinating part of the picture for me, is that we know that there's some work being worked done in Perth, there's been work done in New South Wales, where it's pretty clear that, say, in the Perth study, that when they looked at school children's consumption and where they bought their, what they call sugar-sweetened beverages, so this is, you know, soft drinks, is 77% of the sugar-sweetened beverages that were purchased were not purchased from retail junk food outlets. They were purchased from supermarkets. And we know that most of the consumption is actually occurring at home. Now, this is really important because we've put all our focus on things like the New York intervention, which are important, where we, you know, put focus on, you know, not just in sugar-sweetened beverages, but, you know, things like takeaway food outlets where we do, you know, calorie menu, menu calorie boards where people can see how much they're consuming.
Do a quick summation.
Yeah, that's right. And then also, you know,
as they're filling up.
Yeah, putting restrictions on the size of the cup that soft drinks are served in. These are all really important. But if the majority of these beverages are actually purchased at supermarkets where these restrictions don't apply, then we're kind of missing the boat.
Well, just before we come to what we can do, what do you make of New York City's health board decision about putting a size limit on sugary drinks sold at restaurants and theatres and cafeterias? They're not preventing people from buying, you know, whopping size soft drinks in supermarkets. But this is all part of a Mayor Bloomberg campaign, and I guess an effort to reduce the supersized trend in food portions, which Americans do so well. What do you think of that strategy?
Oh, look, I think they're doing some really interesting and amazing things in New York. Like that's just one of them. The other one is actually a social marketing campaign, where I'm not sure if you've seen it. It's a little bit hard to do it on radio, but where they target young adults in particular, so not teenagers, but it's more around the college age, where they're targeting and they're actually saying, okay, here's a can of soft drink, here is the amount of sugar that you're actually consuming each time you have one of these. Mm-hmm. And they're done in ways, and they actually do the same amount with fat and with a range of other things. So there's a number of strategies they're putting in place which are actually really important in saying, hey, listen, there's a point at which government has to say, listen, the tastes that are being promoted through the marketplace are unhealthy. And there is a role of government here to step in and say, hey, listen, no, we're actually going to protect the health of the citizenry by actually putting these restrictions in place.
Which certainly frustrates many Americans who make the nanny state argument.
Yeah, and look, culturally over there, it actually runs into quite a strong force of opposition. But we know that in the US, the average daily consumption of soft drinks is at the level of 2 cans. Mm. 250 ml cans of soft drink. Now, that's a huge amount for a kid, and it's worth, thankfully, not up at that level, but it's certainly the argument in the United States for introducing these measures is compelling.
John Fitzgerald is my guest. He's Associate Professor at the School of Social and Political Science at the University of Melbourne. We're talking soft drinks, some pretty sobering data about the consumption of soft drinks. What's the critical age in Australia here, do you think, John?
Yeah, the heaviest consumers, interestingly, are around the 19 to 24 age bracket, which a lot of people would go, oh, that's just extraordinary. But that actually, that demographic segment, or especially amongst men, is a heavy consumer of junk food, soft drinks, alcohol. They tend to consume this stuff like crazy. And it's not by accident. They are actually targeted extremely heavily by the advertisers. We know that when it comes to trying to influence this group, it's really hard for government to influence that group because the advertisers for soft drinks and for junk food tend to target that group so heavily, it's really hard to get a countermeasure message in there. Mm. So that's why it's important to actually look for other ways in which we can affect the consumption, maybe at an earlier age. The home environment is actually, this is where it becomes much more important. We know that for grade 10 boys in New South Wales, for example, that 50% of them say that soft drinks are readily available at home. And we know that when we look at the relationship between obesity, one of the strongest factors for predicting obesity in New South Wales school children is the availability of soft drinks in the home.
Fruit juices aren't much better though.
Yeah, true. Fruit juices are a chock-a-block with goodness, as they tend to say.
Well, and certainly the beverage industry has responded in a variety of ways to criticism about the sugar content in their drinks, and their zero-calorie options. There are no sugar drinks. There are no added sugared options for juices. Are these effective alternatives?
Yeah, look, it's a contest, it's a marketplace, so you'll find most of these beverage producers actually will compete with each other at a certain level. If you look at, there's some interesting data from 2009 coming out of New South Wales where they look at the proportion of different types of drinks that different age groups are consuming. And if you actually look at the proportion of what sugar sweetened beverages, what proportion of those are fruit drinks across the ages from 2 right up to 16 or 18, fruit drinks actually occupy about the same amount regardless of age. So kids, as they get older, don't drink a lot more fruit juice. They drink about the same amount. What they drink more of is soft drinks. And in the 16 to 18-year-old group, it's around 60 to 70% of the sugar-sweetened drinks are actually in the form of soft drinks. And so this is where the real deal is. If we're going to influence that consumption, it's not through fruit juices. It's, you know, that's a bit of a red herring argument, and that's more of an argument about the argy-bargy between the players in the marketplace. It's actually with soft drinks is where the real deal is.
So just finally, how then do we target the home? Is it about getting inside the heads of parents? And then even so, the industry might just shift their marketing emphasis to kids getting the stuff outside of home.
Yeah, look, the home is one of the most complicated places to influence people. Tried to influence my little girls, it's pretty hard to influence in the home. What we do know is that in the United States, for example, where they did beverage diaries with teenage girls and they asked them where they got their last sugar-sweetened beverage and where they got their last energy-dense food, so these are junk foods, and they found that it wasn't actually predominantly at retail outlets. Where they get these things is when they go and visit their friend's house. And so, and this, even though US is a different culture to here, but the message was really clear, is the home is a place where we actually give identity to food and we give it meaning. We either serve it, you know, how we serve it, what we serve it with. So if soft drinks are a special treat that we give to visitors and to guests and to people coming for a play date, these are the things, these are the places where we can shift the culture. Because we know that when you ask, you know, secondary school kids, you know, what's their attitudes towards why they drink soft drinks, that around 65 to 70% of them say it's what everyone does. So when we can start influencing that, that's when we start making some inroads.
And there's your challenge.
John Fitzgerald. Yours too, Natasha.
Yeah, well,
yours
it too. Is too. It's a mutual challenge then. John Fitzgerald, thank you. This is a great data to unpack and great to have you on the show this morning. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Associate Professor John Fitzgerald there from the University of Melbourne at the School of Social and Political Sciences. Pause for thought, isn't it, next time you wander around that supermarket with your trolley?